Hi, everybody. Thanks for coming to our session, which is called South by Southwest Action, Outsmarting Malaria. My name's Matt Blumberg. This is Nicholas Mayer. And we thought we'd tell you what we're up to and see if we could talk you into joining us. By way of background, the project started really the last couple of years. I've been coming to the festival and walking around and being kind of amazed as I talked to a million people at how many very, very smart and very skilled people are in these hallways. And the thought was, the question that starts this project is, what could all those people do if they all got together and worked in a focused way on some important problems? So that's what we're about. And in order to make that sort of thing happen, in order to make possible a kind of large-scale collaboration that we have in mind, you kind of need two things. You need a problem, and you need a certain amount of structure and a framework for those people to work within. So our talk is about both of those. We're going to talk about a problem, which is malaria. And we're going to talk about an infrastructure that we've created within which developers, designers, statisticians, people with skills in data visualization and data mining can all work together to make some real progress on the problem and to do something quite useful. So in regards to first characterizing the problem, let me turn things over to Nick, who has been working in this area for quite some time.
Thanks, Matt, and hello, everybody. Let's start on the problem side. So this is something that malaria, that's a problem that's kept us busy and is keeping us busy back home in the Swiss Tropical and Public Health Institute, where I've been working on studying malaria and trying to work towards solutions in many different ways, and the latest attempt is coming here to work with Matt and you on this particular project. So malaria is a disease. For those who don't are not familiar with that, it's a massive public health problem. It's one of the most severe problems in terms of the burden of disease. Many, many people get ill with malaria every year, and though we don't know exactly how many actually die from the disease, it's very difficult to get these numbers. It's probably close to a million people who die every year. And it's mostly young kids that are affected most by the disease, and these are people living in tropic countries. That's where the disease is endemic. And, I mean, that means that at the same time, these are often people who live in countries that are resource constrained, so there's actually not that many resources available to do something about the disease. And at the same time, the disease is also kind of the reason for the resource poorness, in that a vast amount of these countries' budgets goes into health expenditures that are caused by malaria and other tropical diseases, of course. So what is malaria? It's an infectious disease. It's caused by a parasite, and it's actually quite a complicated disease in the sense that it is a parasite that undergoes very many transformations and lives in different stages. And it is also present in two hosts. The disease is transmitted by mosquitoes, which, as you see on the top left of this sketch, the purple mosquito that injects the sporozoites, the infectious stages of the disease, they enter the human body, and they multiply these parasites, mainly in the red blood cells. And this is what causes the symptoms in the humans. And after some time, there's transmissible stages in the blood that can be taken up by a mosquito and be transferred to the next stage. So it's a relatively complex system. And what's maybe surprising, it is actually a disease that's relatively easy to do something about. There's a number of interventions that exist already today against malaria. It is a treatable disease. People who get prompt treatment usually can be cured. And there's many ways in which people can protect themselves against the disease. So mosquito nets, for example, have been demonstrated to have a big impact on the malaria mortality in young children if they are distributed on a large scale in certain regions. There's also a lot of effort that's gone recently into malaria research and the search for new ways of combating the disease, and that includes vaccines like we know them for many other diseases. It's very difficult because of what I said about the complex life cycle of the parasite to develop a vaccine, but there's now efforts on the way. Vaccines are relatively close to licensure, and we hope that this will be another tool that can be added to this arsenal to fight the disease. But all the things that we currently have, and even these interventions that are in the pipeline and should be licensed and available for control soon, none of them is really perfect. None of them is 100% effective, and the parasite evolving in a response to being targeted by these interventions actually every now and then manages to escape the effect, for example, of a drug, and drugs become useless after a certain time. So the question is, as there is no silver bullet here, what should we do? Where should we invest these scarce resources into controlling the disease? And this is actually not an easy question. This is a sketch that I'm not going to discuss in much detail, but it shows again what we've seen on the life cycle parasite human mosquito plot, in that there's really many processes that are involved in the transmission of the parasite and it's causing the disease. And as I mentioned just previously, there's a lot of points where the disease or the parasite could be targeted. And as is often the case in such a system, you see that there's a lot of links going between these different points and foci of interest. For example, if we talk about drug treatment, the effect is, on the one hand, that we protect the people or the person who has the parasite and is sick from getting severely sick or dying. At the same time, we potentially protect someone else by preventing that parasite being transmitted to another person from that one. So that is a typical feedback cycle, and that of those, there are many in this system, and that's what makes it very difficult to predict what is going to happen if we employ a certain control intervention, and therefore also which is the best place to put the money. So that's where mathematical modeling comes in. Mathematical modeling is a tool that can be used to more rationally think about the planning of diseases, in better understanding these complex processes, and therefore eventually guiding policymaking towards resource allocation. And there's a wide range of possible mathematical models that people have invented when they studied infectious diseases like malaria, going from simple, very simple equation-based model that you can analyze and study on a piece of paper to more complex computer simulation models. And that's the type of research that we've been doing in our institute over the last few years. So when I talk about simulation models, computer simulations, what you can think of as an analogy is for example, an engineer would do today very often in engineering processes. People these days employ computer simulations because they are a cheaper way of studying certain effects of improvements. So before going to wind channel these days, an engineer would often study potential modifications on a car in computer simulation models. So this is the type of approach that we're taking here with the malaria models. And as I mentioned before, trying to address certain questions, where such as where, if we know this, there's a range of interventions or tools, drugs, vaccines, insecticides, etc., that are in the pipeline. If somebody wants to invest money into developing these, where would the money best go? So that's the so-called minimal profile of a future interventions, or talking about existing interventions, how would we best deploy these given the geographic setting, the malaria endemicity, so the disease transmission intensity. Would we, for example, target young children with a vaccine where we know that they are most vulnerable to the disease, or would we rather try and give it to everybody in the population, maybe at a lower coverage, just knowing that adults are very important as being transmissive agents, so people who actually contribute a lot to transmitting the disease. So how do these models, these computer simulation models that we have been developing, how do these work? So in technical language, we call these discrete time individual-based simulation models, which simply means that we have an abstraction in the computer simulation model of single individuals, human individuals, as you see them ID'd 1 to 4, and we look at them over time in discrete time steps. So what you see here is 4 individuals, a small example population, and because these are event-based simulations, we're looking at what happens in the computer simulations from one time step to the next. So possible events are a vaccination event if we're simulating a vaccination strategy, trying to find out what it's going to do, drug treatment, obviously new infections as malaria is transmitted, and the clinical outcomes such as mortality that is caused by malaria. And we do that for large simulated populations and over a long time, taking into account these processes that we believe are important in driving the dynamical system that was depicted on the plot with the many boxes. So that is a very, very minimal description of the model. We have implemented this in a computer programming language, and if you want to know more about that, you can find this open malaria code base, as we call it, on Google Code. So what we're trying to do here is what we also call predictive modeling. In other words, we try to make quantitative predictions going into the future and trying to extrapolate from what we know about the disease situation, but also about the effect of the interventions we currently know. We try to extrapolate from that to the long-term impact that such control interventions would have. And the reason I'm saying that is that we know quite a lot about how these interventions work. As I said, ITNs reduce childhood mortality, but we have very little idea what they do in the long term, because they have also these indirect effects that are very difficult to capture. So what we try to parameterize our models with real-world inputs, and we create model predictions out of that. And then there's obviously, like very similar to the discussions we have about global warming or climate change, there's always the question, how well actually do these model predictions align with reality? How much how much uncertainty is there? So in order to get closer to real world to reduce the uncertainty in these model predictions, we try to get as much as information as possible from the real world, as I said. Now, in the case of these mathematical models, what we're talking about here is actually a set of processes like the ones we've looked at here that are guided by mathematical equations. And what these equations, how they behave and how they determine these events, is actually depends on what parameters we feed into these mathematical equations, what values these parameters take. And this is something that we can inform by looking at real-world data. So we're trying to get our prediction as close as possible to reality. This is an example of what that means. We have, as black squares here, we have some data that someone gathered actually some time ago in a large-scale field study of malaria parasitology in Africa, in Nigeria, is where this data is coming from. We used that, and we tried to see whether our model was predict, giving the real-world inputs, was able to predict this epidemiological picture we're seeing here. And obviously, if you don't know the parameter values in the first place, this is not going to work. And so what we do is we try to iteratively optimize our models so that we get as close as possible to this real-world situation. The way this works is we have these mathematical parameters, these input values that we feed in, and we can have a statistical measure, a scoring function, if you like, of how close our white triangles are to the black squares. So we try such input parameter sets and see how well the fit to the field data is. And because it's not going to be very good in the beginning, we iteratively repeat this process many times. And this is what this looks like over time. So what we did here is we tried many, many times different parameter sets and compared the predictions with the field data. And because we try to inform the next parameter set by what we've seen from the previous one, we can employ an optimization algorithm that will actually guide this optimization process. We don't only do that for one single model. We have actually a number of alternative models, again, to address this problem that we want to learn something about the uncertainty in the predictions, and we do that many times for many models. Now, this is actually a very short summary of quite a complicated process. There's a lot of challenges in trying to fit such simulation models to field data. I showed you an input parameter set, a three parameter values, but that's actually a slight simplification of reality. In reality, what we have in these models is quite a high-dimensional parameter space that we want to explore in order to approach these realistic predictions. And so we have about 25 of these parameters, a 25-dimensional parameter space. And running these models, as I said, we need to do that again and again. It's actually computationally quite expensive. So these models take a long time to run on a computer. And because of some statistical properties of them, that we are actually somewhat restricted in what we can do in using an optimization algorithm. So all that together means we have to run many, many millions of models, and each of them takes a considerable amount of time to run, namely about an hour or so. So we need some kind of supercomputing to do that. And that's what we're currently addressing with a project called malariacontrol.net. This is a so-called volunteer computing project. When we first started out developing these models, we already had the problem that we were short of computing power. So at that stage, what we tried was to harness the in-house computing capacity of our institute, just using the desktop computers, their idle time to run the models, but that soon turned out to be not sufficient. So a few years ago, we started setting up malariacontrol.net. So that is a BOINC, it's a volunteer computing framework, a BOINC-based volunteer computing project. So what we do here is we invite volunteers from all over the planet who want to contribute to our research to sign up to this project. They attach the computer. The computer downloads these simulation input files, basically, and they compute it on their computer, and they get sent back. And so this is how we try to address the challenging computational demands of doing that kind of optimization procedure. Now, while we have a very impressive number of people who are willing to contribute. Currently we have about 20,000 people who are actively contributing all over the planet. We're still not convinced that there's not a better way of doing that. When I'm saying a better way, I mean that we still have to wait actually quite a long time until we get optimized models back from this process. So this takes us somewhat close already to the solution parts, but I quickly wanted to stop here and just ask if anyone had questions about the part so far, and if so, you would need to use the microphone, but I think that was all.
Okay, so moving forward from here, it's not really necessary to, I think, deeply understand the bits about malaria and how it works, but we wanted to give some context about what the system will be and the sorts of things that we'll be asking people to do. So why don't we keep going to the next thing?
Okay, right. So I mentioned that we're using so-called optimization algorithms to guide that process of primate estimation. And this is actually the point where we think we could still do better. And we have actually started trying out a number of optimization algorithms. Optimization algorithm research is a very active field of research, and people are trying to come up with all kinds of different ways of getting to that optimal fit of actually not only malaria models, obviously, but a number of optimization problems as quickly as possible. And we tried a number of those, but so far we couldn't come up with something that was substantially better than the system we're currently using. So that's when this idea came in that maybe we don't want to rely on computers only anymore in that, but also try and make use of the human brain to guide that process of model optimization. And so this is not an idea that we had. This is something that people have been thinking about for some time. And there's quite successful projects at the moment already employing that approach. So one very prominent example of so-called human-aided or human-guided optimization project is called FOLDIT. So that is a research project that tries to make predictions. It's a structural biology project that these people try to make predictions of what shape a protein would fold into given the genetic information that encodes for the protein. And this is useful to know if you want to develop, actually, if you want to understand diseases or develop drugs against diseases. And it's also something where people have felt for a long time they were limited by computing power. It's very intensive. And this project FOLDIT demonstrated that under certain circumstances, they could actually improve the conversion speed. That's, by that we mean the time it takes from the starting point of the optimization to a fitted, optimized model. They could reduce that speed by having humans do some of the parts that the optimization algorithm in the computer would have done before. Maybe you have a time later to discuss that in more detail, but the idea was simple. Maybe we could actually also try and use some of the information that we accumulate in our database as a consequence of running model fitting to speed up that process. So what we're looking at here is, again, it's some relationship between parameter values and the model fit. And everything that's high up means it's a badly fitting model. Everything that is low down means it's a better fitting model. So the points low down would be a close fit between the two curves. And we plot this here as a function of the value of one particular of these many parameters that I mentioned before. And so if we would use our standard optimization algorithm, the computer would more or less, using a random walk, try and explore the parameter space incrementally coming closer to the optimal solution. But if you look at this picture as a human, you can also already see that maybe there's some relationship here between the parameter having higher values on the right side and the fit to the data being better. So in principle, you can also exploit that information in computer, but that's not trivial, I would say. So if the computer continues, as we said before, I mean, he's basically going to try a lot of these solutions, and eventually he's going to come to a point where there's enough iterations, enough model runs done that we can identify some optimal value of that parameter. And our idea was that maybe if a human had done that, we would see less dots on this plot because the human would have found its way to the bottom of the curve of the cloud here faster, more efficiently. So that's why we tried and set up a very simple proof of concept application that would take the information that accumulates in the database as a function of the fitting process, so all the information of pre-existing model runs, visualize that information in some way that we could hope that a human would actually be able to point the algorithm to the next better value or to a better value. This is a screenshot here of this simple application. It's basically just a web application, a simple web interface to the job creation or optimization creation algorithm on this malaria-controlled volunteer project. And using that to explore the potential of this approach, I mean, there's some evidence that it's actually possible that this will work, but as you see already from this quite poor screenshot here, there's a lot of challenges. It's not at all, for people like me at least, easy to think about how you would process the information that is existing there in a way that is a bit more aesthetic, but also more informative to the human eye, so that they could actually work from that information and hopefully feedback new parameter proposals. So this, I think, is where you would come in. So okay. I hand back to Matt.
So in broad terms, just looking at I guess this by way of example. So there's a clear sort of optimum value down here, and the computer had to go through quite a large number of iterations to figure out where that was. A person, as that sort of U-shape began to form, a person could probably in maybe half as many guesses, identify the shape and just stick a pin down there at the bottom. And by saving that number of iterations, it's a considerable jump forward in the amount of time it takes to solve that problem, the amount of resources, which are expenses it takes to solve that problem. And so this is taken as a general proof that there would exist some way to represent this data to people so that they could accelerate the process. Really, all of the stuff about malaria is to give some context, but in general, what we're talking about really is limited to this kind of optimization problem, wherein you have these sorts of evolutionary algorithms which are used in cosmology and climate and physics and in a great range of problems, where you have these evolutionary algorithms that are randomly trying stuff, and then they pick the best, and then they randomly try some more. And so we're trying to put humans into the random step to make it faster. So what we're suggesting here with this project is basically a two-year enterprise. The first year, we're proposing to engage the community to develop a set of computer games. Different people would have different teams and, given the same data, create web applications that maybe visualize these things in different ways. A guy that we started talking to a while ago took the data from these plots and put it into the Quake engine to try and generate landscapes or something like that. Another thing might be, instead of presenting these dots as a plot like this, of making various kinds of movies that would visualize trends, and you'd see a wave moving, and it would say where would the dot be on the next frame, or you might like fold it, visualize things in some three-dimensional form, and you could explore through the historical data how moving one piece kicked all the other parameters around. But the ultimate goal is to give people the information and the tools to explore that information so that they can make smart guesses. And if we can create games that enable people to make smart guesses, we will have considerably advanced the malaria models in a way that can potentially considerably advance their utility in the world, because these are tools that people use to make decisions, and if they were better, then the decisions would be better. So the first year we want to try and engage people to make some of these games, and then the second year we hope to aspire to come back here with some number of games that are demonstrated to be good insofar as the people who play them actually give better results than the algorithms. And the second year we hope to come back and engage a different part of the South By community to blog about it and to draw people into playing those games that appear to work. So what we've been working on putting together are methods for accessing the data and APIs that game developers can use to plug into to build their game. So we have a platform that we'll talk through, and the idea is that everybody around who's interested will develop games based on that platform, and we'll see where it goes. At the same time, in parallel, we have a community portal where everybody who's working on their own can come and, first of all, see documentation about the APIs and things like that, but also talk to each other about what's working, what's not working, share bits of code, the sorts of things that you would expect to see in a development community. And again, I want to emphasize it's sort of a general problem, this optimization of evolutionary algorithms, that many of the solutions that we might come up with would have applicability beyond the specific problem of malaria, but I think it would be useful enough if it helped with malaria. So by way of the architecture we were talking about, so there's the idea is that in the center is the modeling server, which is basically malariacontrol.net, and that people would develop these games basically as web applications on their own web servers. And the lines between, these are basically APIs where the game server will get a batch of data from the modeling server explaining the past history, which is sort of the collective memory of the modeling server. I tried this, this happened. I tried that, that happened. And they're also RPCs such that any individual game which shows, visualizes this stuff to their players, the player plays the game, and based on what they see, they stick their pin in the map in various places and say, I think this is a better guess than, going to be better than any of the ones that are in here. So that means that the game has a simple method of submitting a job to the modeling server. It says, I think this is a better guess than any ones you sent me, and then the modeling server will run the simulation based on that input and eventually give the results back to the game so that they can tell their players, you got a 49 because your score was actually only about half as good as the ones that were in there, or you got 120, yours is the best score anybody's ever done, and this is like really cool. So there's a sort of modeling server as the hub, and then each game is a universe unto itself that gets developed and communicates back and forth with the modeling server. Then on the side, as mentioned, we have in support this community portal, which has documentation, discussion, and also, importantly, potentially shared libraries. So, for instance, we started talking with some people who are into statistics about are there ways that we can reduce the number of variables that the users have to contend with from 25 to something like 7 and still make meaningful results, and there might be. So it's possible that we could develop some feature reduction libraries, and those could be just put up on the site, and so anybody developing a game could just grab one of those libraries so that their game only had to have five or seven variables presented to the user instead of 25. There might be shared libraries in regards to accounting. So, you know, all the games are going to have to, in various ways, manage scores and results for their users. And so you don't need everybody to have to do that all over one after another. So, you know, if somebody does that, puts it up, then everybody can use that. So by way of drilling down a little bit into that picture, in particular, drilling down into the arrows that comprise the connections between the modeling server and the games, the first key bit is the data set, which is just basically a file with a gigantic table, and it has a list of the iterations that have a number. This was the first try, this was the second try, this was the third try. For each iteration, it'll tell you, here's the parameter values we tried. It was, the first one was 2, and the second one was 25, the third one was 3, and then a score, like this set of parameters got like a 75, and then this second set of parameters got a 20, and so on. So that the ID, the parameter values, and the score constitute a record, and we'll just have all the records of everything everybody tried, and those will be the things that the games would visualize in various ways and allow the user to explore. So initially what we'll do is post just a single data set. At some point down the line, we'll upgrade that to update that data daily, so that you get a little bit more benefit out of the growing data set, and also so that you can begin to get back your scores. But for the purpose of initial development, we'll just post a single batch. So that's the data set. Then we have a number of APIs or for people to access stuff. So the first bit is, once you have this game and you've got this data and people are looking through, you need a way to submit your players' guesses. So we have a way for you'll submit a guess, and then you'll get in reply initially an ID number that will tell you the sort of identify your parameter set, because it takes about 2 days for the cycle to turn around for the simulation to complete. So you send in, here's my user is going to guess 25. You know, it's like a lottery ticket. He puts in his string of numbers, which he doesn't know our numbers. He might have just clicked on little dots and stuff. And he gets back an ID. And when we do the daily stats updates, as each game server picks up the updated data, the records will have these iteration IDs so that it can pick up the results for each user and see how they did after a little bit of latency. And that's one of the bigger challenges, is the games will enable the users to interact with the historic data in real time, but it takes a while to get back your actual stuff. So at some level, in terms of game design, hopefully that will be a thing that people can just work with and make it feel sort of turn-based kind of thing, like here's how many jobs you're allowed to submit, and then you have to wait and see how it did. And also maybe that imposes a certain amount of modesty on the time request made of the actual players, because they have to wait a little bit to get their results. Then the third bit of the sort of infrastructure is this portal, which we have up at SXSWaction.org, where we've got primarily discussion forms and documentation and links to important files. So hopefully that becomes the place where around which the community circles and gets their stuff done. One interesting possibility is the notion, to the extent that we have a number of independent developers developing independent games, and we have quite objective scoring function, as we could have a little bit of competition among the games themselves to see whose game really is doing the best. And among other things, down the road, that creates the possibility of allocating resources in terms of outreach according to the games that are doing the best. So that's sort of the whirlwind tour of malaria and kind of what we had in mind. The next thing to do is to see if anybody has any questions about the sort of malaria process in general, about modeling in general, about the project or the platform. Okay. So how much, we got a couple minutes left, so we were thinking to just get a general idea of, who is here, who are you guys, and your thoughts about the system, about possibilities for what these sorts of games could look like, and about how to reach out to initially other developers, but ultimately other players. So let's start with the first question. Anybody want to say anything about your background and interests and this sort of thing?
Sure, I'll start.
Okay.
My name is Blaine. I'm a consultant. My answer is just for the sake of the podcast. Oh, the podcast, all right. So, yeah, I'm Christian Lane. we do a lot of IT and business process consulting. And I think, I think what Matt and Mayor are doing is pretty phenomenal. We've helped clients in the past with getting certain data models and stuff like that presentable to help model things that are going on in the environment, water stress indexes and things like that. And they've never done anything to make it gamify it or help socialize it a little further, like you guys are attempting to do. I guess I think there's a whole social aspect to this with social media and things like that to expand the game and share your results and those kinds of things. I'm curious on a couple things. Can the 2 days be made faster? I don't know. Who's asking? These turnarounds? And I think, I'm curious to see what these games develop like. I'm not a gaming kind of guy, but we do know people in the gaming world. I think something we could do is maybe just introduce you guys to some other folks that might be interested in these kinds of things. I've done similar things. I don't know. And as far as outreach, we'll promote this as far as we can in our networks and all that, for sure.
Oh, thanks. So the there's sort of the two layers of social outreach. The first, the sort of obvious layer is once there exists some number of good games is outreach to players. But the preliminary outreach is to developers, statisticians, people with the special skills that are necessary to build such a thing. So that's really important. As to the can the 2 days be made faster, that's probably a better question for Nick.
So thanks, Christian. Excellent points. Just on the 2 days, obviously that is something that we're very interested in bringing down and have been for some time because it also hurts the performance of the computerized optimization algorithms. And so that's actually a feature or an issue you get with these volunteer computing systems. They're very high throughput. You get a lot of jobs done, but it's also high latency because you need to give these people time. They get upset when they switch off the compute over the weekend, and then they're told when they send the job back that it's been for nothing. So we've tried, and the developers of Boink, this volunteer computing framework, they've tried a lot of things to minimize that latency. And it's tough. It's really not easy. But there's other possible models where you could think about how you would address that. So, we're thinking about scaling down the problem in some way that the actual computing power needed for the evaluation of one iteration would be much smaller. And that, we believe we can do that at the cost of having to validate, again, using the original runtime, such jobs if they look successful. But all the ones that are maybe not top, we could run them shorter and probably not lose a lot by throwing them away if they don't. So we hope we can address that issue a bit more. I mean, it's clear that is an issue in this.
So any other, anybody want to talk about their background and how this relates to what they're doing or doesn't relate to what they're doing?
I'm Danny, and I saw this title, Malaria, that's why I came, because I learned this in the nursing school, but I don't have any idea what you guys are going to talk about. It's kind of amazing. Yeah, it's a little difficult for me to understand because it's really science-based. But I'm here to learn.
Thank you. One of the things that I want to emphasize is for the purposes of this project, first of all, if we do it right, the people who ultimately play the games that are developed don't need to know anything about malaria. And in theory, if the games were done right, they don't even need to know that the game is about malaria. It could look like some little puzzle game or a guessing game or something like that. It's very abstract and has nothing to do with malaria. It's little dots or colorful shapes or lines or whatever. It's also true, to a somewhat lesser extent, that the developers of the game actually don't need to know anything about malaria. We tried to explain it to give some context, because it's otherwise seems like a little bit of a crazy claim to say you're going to design these games and they're going to like be really useful for solving malaria, but you don't need to know anything about malaria. It was sort of like people would scratch their head, we were afraid, and be like, really? I don't kind of believe that. So we thought we would explain it, but it is in fact true that all you need to know is that you get these big batches of data, and they represent the sequence of guesses with associated scores. And the only thing you're trying to do is to, based on a considerable amount of history, is say what would be a better guess that would get a better score. And you don't have to know why these things worked or didn't work. And the truth of the matter is, I don't want to undersell Nick, but the nature of evolutionary algorithms is, after a point, I don't even know if Nick knows why they work. Maybe he does, and that's not fair. But somebody designing the game, completely, it's totally irrelevant. And maybe we shouldn't have talked about all the malaria, and we should have just talked about, here's we're going to give you a bunch of inputs and scores, and the deal is tell me a better input than the ones I have. And you have some black box function. Stuff goes in, stuff comes out. It works the same. You know, everybody has the same rules, and that's it, because that's basically what it's about.
Hi, I'm Niffer. I work with a nonprofit, and we do a lot of work in Africa, and so malaria is something that I have friends who have had malaria in the last year, so it's a little different over here. But I would say that as much as it's not important to understand the science of malaria and all the science that goes into it, I think that people are very cause-driven. The statistics on young people wanting to participate in cause is a really good selling factor for games. And so as your developers work on them, I work on the social side, and that's always a really good way when people feel like they're doing things for the good of the world.
Yeah, I think that would be great. And I think in an ideal world, and kind of what we're after, and I don't know if it will work or not, is that the games should be fun for their own sake. Because if they're not, there's only a certain amount of traction you'll get out of, eat your spinach kind of stuff. But a game that's fun for its own sake, which also has a constructive social function, would be, I think, really great. And I think it should be possible to do that with what we've got. But it's a little bit outside the domains of our expertise, sort of a game design, and in particular data visualization. Like the biggest challenge is how do you present this stuff to people in a way that enables them to make these better guesses. And there's a million ways to do that, and we thought we could come up with one of them maybe on our own, and it would be better to try and get a community, create the infrastructure to enable a community to try, you know, 1,000 different ways and see where that got us.
Okay.
So we hope basically everybody will come join. We've got the website up here again, with the typo again. So it's SXSW, like the conference, action.org. We've got a Twitter hashtag for discussion. And so come by, take a look. And most importantly, as you walk around, tell people who you think might be interested, tell people who you know, if you're a blogger, you know, the main objective at the moment is we need to get some people engaged in the process and trying to build this stuff with us. So so please do spread the word, and thanks for your time, and good luck at the rest of the conference.
Thanks, all.
Great.